Okay, I think we're going to go ahead and get started. Good morning. Welcome to Cloud Optimized Networking and Windows Server 2012 R2. My name is Bob Combs, and
hi. There we go. Hi, I'm Greg Cosanza.
We are program managers in the Windows Data Center networking team. One of the interesting things about the role of being a program manager is you manage the product group development of the feature, but you also are kind of the first line of defense in the product group for when issues get escalated. The nice thing about that is that we get to hear issues directly from customers kind of on a regular basis, maybe sometimes to a distracting basis. But the nice thing about that is that we do get a good feel for what's going on. And one of the things that we hear quite often is that everybody's being asked to do more with less. You know, I want to be able to buy less server gear or spend less money on my server gear, and yet I want more performance, I want more networking throughput, I want faster connections. We also hear a lot about wanting to reduce the touch, to be able to not, you know, the data centers are a lot of remote gear. I don't want to have to venture into the data center. I need to be able to remotely get to it or to debug it with a minimum amount of effort. In other words, I need to be able to turn the lights off in the data center and be able to do everything remotely. And of course, everybody has a rather wide set of different types of gear, and those things all need to be integrated and managed in a consistent manner. And of course, the end users are always giving pressure for the things that they want out of it. They want the flexibility to be able to manage some of their own destiny. And of course, the data center administrators don't want to give them too much flexibility that they can hurt themselves, but at the same time, they don't want to take on the extra burden of doing that administration. So these are some of the kind of the challenges that are in the data centers today. They kind of break out when we start to classify these things into some specific scenarios that are rather important to data centers. One is I have applications where, you know, that I'm running, and I want to make sure that these things are always available. Even when I move them around from machine to machine, they can't go down. I need to make sure that they can fail over maybe gracefully. That isn't true of all applications in the data center. In fact, I think the majority probably aren't in that continuously available mode, but there are some that are. And of course, as applications and virtual machines tend to scale up today, you need more and more networking performance. So as we're going to see the advent of 40 gig networks and 100 gig networks, you can imagine that virtual machines are going to be having wider and wider pipes of information into them. So there's got to be ways to increase the performance and throughput of that networking connection into the system. And of course, I have to, you know, software-defined networking. It's almost like a buzzword anymore. But what it really comes down to is I want my network fabric to be stable, and I want to be able to put tenant networks on top of that, and I want to be able to put lots of tenant networks on top of that, and not, you know, I need them to be isolated from one another, and I need a way that I can easily manage them. And of course, the other part of this is I'd like to be able to not only manage those things, but I'd like to be able to move them not just within my data center, in my on-premises data center, but I'd also like to be able to push some of them as needed out to service providers, to hosters, maybe to Windows Azure. And I need to be able to talk to those things in the same way, keep these things all connected. And I want a consistent, simple management interface, one that I can use across the board for all of this. So kind of with that, those thoughts in mind, there's a lot of functionality that we put into Windows Server 2012 R2. I'm not going to talk about all these things. I'm going to drill into a couple of these, and then Greg's going to get into showing us a little bit more how you actually go about configuring some of these things. But let me just touch on a couple of quick things here. Things like SMB multi-channel for my storage, SMB direct, RDMA for storage, IP address management, extending to Azure. And you can see that these are kind of grouped, you know, under the different categories of I need better performance, I need to make sure that I keep my tenants secure, I need to make sure I can manage these things, and that they have this flexibility to move around. So let me drill into a couple. So one of the things we've done is we've looked at the policies that you want to apply for a particular workload for that virtual machine and said, you know, those things all have to move to the host edge. And to us, what that host edge means is they're policies that are applied inside the Hyper-V extensible switch. And it's extensible because not only did we provide a rich set of policies, things like ACLs and QoS, et cetera, but we've also made it extensible so that third parties can plug in yet additional capabilities to extend those policies. And of course, if I'm actually managing my host correctly, I need to make sure that I can limit the bandwidth that one virtual machine can take. And there's a couple of ways you do that. We actually have what you would call bandwidth reservations that you can reserve for a particular virtual port. You can put a cap on that, or you might even use traffic classes like as in DCB. This particular diagram is trying to show you that you can apportion these things with percentages, that is weights we call them. And you'll notice that if I look at three different time slices, there could be different types of usage. So this lets you maximize the bandwidth that you're actually getting out of the network. Security is a big issue. One of the things that we did was we put in extended ACLs. Extended ACLs essentially take not only the IP address, but they also take the service port as well into account. And you can actually set up stateful ACLs as well, which lets you essentially implement a simple version of firewall rules. A bunch of things that we did in performance. Couple of the more interesting ones here. Virtual RSS. How many of you know what RSS in native mode is? Okay, a few. So essentially what it does on native machine is the NIC does a qualification of the packet by doing a hash on the header, and from that it uses it to guide those packets to specific cores on the processor. The problem comes in when you're using Hyper-V, RSS is not usable directly. You would use something like VMQ. And I'll talk about that in a second. But the next issue comes up with, well, how do I spread that traffic load? Like, suppose I need a really fat pipe, you know, coming in from the NIC all the way into the virtual machine. How do I make sure that I can handle that load? Because a single processor can only handle so much traffic before it starts to bog down. And the way you do that, VRSS actually spreads the load across multiple cores in the host. And when it goes to the VM, it also spreads it across multiple cores there, too. So it's a two-step process. VMQ is the way that we actually normally indicate packets up in Hyper-V to the virtual switch. And it assigns a queue per VM connection. But what happens with those things, they get spread across the cores. But as traffic increases, you really need more cores applied. But it turns out there's an overhead associated with spreading the traffic. What dynamic VMQ does is it actually adds cores as it's needed, and when traffic begins to shrink down, it reduces that traffic back to fewer cores. How many of you are using NIC teaming? Fair number. Okay, great. So if you've been using NIC teaming, you're probably aware that in R2 we put in dynamic teaming mode. Any traffic, if you look at the stream of traffic, a TCP connection, typically the packets are kind of in bunches. There's gaps around. When there's the gaps, we kind of look at those contiguous sections and kind of refer to those as flowlets, and we can actually guide those flowlets to different NICs inside the team. That's not something that actually happens with the other teaming modes. It actually is affinitized. Each connection is affinitized to a particular NIC. With dynamic teaming, it actually now lets those flowlets spread across multiple NICs, letting you get better aggregated bandwidth use out of your team. By the way, if there are any questions, feel free to stick up. I know a couple others, RDMA. You know that we did a lot of work around RDMA. Primarily, this is for SMB, for storage. SRIOV, single root IO virtualization is a mechanism where the virtual machine can actually talk directly to the NIC, bypassing the host partition. It obviously reduces your CPU load significantly. It reduces your I/O latency, and that actually causes a slight increase in throughput as well. The downside of it is that since it bypasses the host partition, it means that any policies that might be applied wouldn't normally get applied. However, the way we do that is if you actually apply a policy, like let's say, for example, you put an ACL or a QoS limit on a particular SRIOV type connection, it will revert that connection back to the synthetic path to guarantee that the SLA is maintained. How many of you are familiar with Hyper-V network virtualization at this stage? It's been out now since 2012. Okay, good. So you know that the Hyper-V network virtualization allows you to put multiple tenants on top of the same network fabric. And the isolation mechanism here used, you can think of it similar to a VLAN, but it's actually a virtual subnet ID, a 24-bit subnet ID. So instead of having a limitation of something like 4,095 subnets, you actually can now create 16 million tenant networks in your data center. And that was a significant jump forward. There's also a lot of other work that's done within it. It's easy to administer and deploy through SCVMM. If you do it through PowerShell, you'll probably pull your hair out. No, that was a kind of joke, yes. It's early in the morning. I get you. You really want to use SCVMM to deploy HNV. That's the way to really work with it. And it'll make your life a lot easier. It'll let you deploy the networks. It is really SDN, making it flexible and easy for you to actually deploy these tenant networks on top of your network fabric. This is just showing two tenant networks, a blue network and a yellow network. A couple other things we did. We built and put inbox, kind of the response of folks like yourselves. Said, hey, this is great. You got some of these things like HNV and such. But I said, problem I have in my data center is I really need a way to deploy gateways and such to connect out to my other legacy networks or enterprises. So there's a site-to-site gateway on that. It is multi-tenant, which lets you scale out and be a little bit more efficient with that gateway. And should there be changes in the network routing, BGP protocol is supported there to take care of that and automatically adjust those things. It obviously does Hyper-V network virtualization in CAP DCAP, that is the NVGRE packeting. And we did a forwarding gateway. This is really in response to making sure that if you do build out an HNV subnet, that you can have from that subnet connections back to some of your legacy devices, be they storage or printers, what have you. Yeah, showing some migration. There have been a lot of partners that we've worked with in a lot of different areas here, gateway appliances, top of rack switches. I mentioned Hyper-V switch extensions before, and putting a lot of base capabilities like NVGRE awareness into chipsets and such. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Greg.
All right. Thanks, Bob. So I actually spent a few years on the VMM team working, taking all these features from the platform that Bob just talked about, and figuring out how to manage them and bring them together. Because that's really, when you build a data center, you can't go to every host and set up all these policies, set up the network virtualization yourself. You need something that can go out and apply that policy consistently And if things move around, whether a VM fails over or you do a live migration, you need something that will go and actually update the policy to make sure all your VMs can still talk to each other, you know, when network virtualization is in use. So I'm going to walk through and show you some of the key parts of setting up a data center using a CVMM as the primary tool. So this is a picture of my data center right here, sitting under my desk in my office. I like to show this because, I like to show off my cabling, my fancy cabling job. The real reason is because, you know, I like to show that it doesn't take much to build up basically a full cloud out of Microsoft products. I'm using fairly old machines. Nothing here was designed for network virtualization. But it works, and it's great for doing a proof of concept or small deployments. And then, you know, from here on, it's really just a matter of optimizing it for production, making it reliable, and applying a lot of the necessary security policies to it. If you actually look at what I have on these hosts, you can see there are quite a few components needed to turn this networking into a full cloud. I have an internet connection that comes in the bottom left corner, labeled as INET. It comes in on a VLAN that I have dedicated to my internet. And then it goes into a firewall NAT on the far left side that, you know, basically acts as the front door to my data center. Usually you would have a dedicated hardware appliance for this. In my case, I didn't have the budget for that, so I have a VM that's running as my firewall. That then bridges into my data center network, and I only expose in the ports that are needed. And then I have basically one single network fabric that's used for all of my uses within this environment. And if I do need to carve things out for tenants, I do that with network virtualization. I never need to touch that fabric network that I have built up underneath as my data center. Some of the other components you need, of course, AD, DNS, DHCP. That's, you know, how you manage your policy or your users within your environment. I have the Windows Azure Pack, the WAP portal, with SPF that provides the REST interface that the Azure Pack uses to talk then into System Center. The primary component needed for exposing this stuff out to the users is VMM. So I have a VM for VMM on my second host. SQL is needed for backing up VMM or for its database. I have one tenant VM, so this whole data center is just for one tenant VM that's running there. Obviously, you would probably have more than that. I have a node dedicated to just storage. We're not going to talk about that because this is about networking. But I do include it in here because you do need to have, when you deploy your network virtualization gateway, we provide a service template that I'll show you how to use. And that service template assumes that you're going to have a scale-out file server for the cluster disks that are going to be used for sharing the cluster storage. You can also deploy the gateway using, you know, any other cluster storage you have available, but then you have to go and deploy the VMs and set them up yourself. It's much easier once you have the service template, and you can do that with the scale-out file server. And then on the far right, I have my two hosts that are dedicated to being my network virtualization gateways. I have two hosts so that I can have them configured in a highly available manner, so that one will be active, and if that host goes down or the VM goes down, the clustering will fail it over to the other node. And so that way, you can make sure that your virtual networks and your tenants can always get access to their network, even if there is a failure in your environment. So the first thing I want to point out here and that I'm going to show you is that every host has the network configured in the exact same way. You know, one of the things that I strive for and I tell, our customers to strive for is consistency across all your hosts. Because anytime you get variability in there, then you start to have problems. Because if a VM lands on that host or, you know, you run out of capacity in a certain area, you need to be able to use capacity somewhere else. So you want to make sure your data center is configured as consistently as possible. I'm going to walk through some of how to do that. When you actually look at what you want to set your host up to look like, there are quite a few things you need to, you know, quite a few functions in the host that you need to have configured and set up to work with the network. You have management, clustering, live migration. Each of these has their own quality of service requirements, and different needs from the network. So generally, our recommendation is you carve out a separate virtual NIC for each one. If you're using RDMA, that can't go through a virtual switch. You lose the RDMA capabilities. So if you're using RDMA for your fast storage, you need to have a set of adapters dedicated to that. And of course, if you have SAN, then you'd have an HBA. Those would be your other set of adapters. But if you are using something like iSCSI or non-RDMA storage, the general recommendation is to create virtual adapters, multiple virtual adapters, so that you can take advantage of VMQ. You still won't get to use VRSS, but you can use VMQ. And then you'd want to have a NIC for replica as well. Just some general recommendations around teaming. There's a new mode in 2012 called dynamic teaming that makes it much more efficient for how the packets go out of the switch. Now, that's a lot of settings that you need to apply to your host. So how do you actually make sure that every host is configured the same way? All of your virtual adapters have the same settings. All of your NICs, VMM knows that all of the NICs have the same networks applied to them, so the cluster works correctly. Well, in VMM, we have a concept called a logical switch. The logical switch is really your central place where you define all the settings that you're going to use on all your hosts across your data center. And then you go out, you apply those settings to each host, and so you'll get the same settings on every host every time. So there is an uplink port profile that we use to create the team. And it contains the teaming settings. It also defines what VLANs are available out on the physical network. We have a set of virtual switch settings, so things like, do you want to enable SRIOV on the virtual switch? We'll apply those as well, consistently. And then for each one of the virtual adapters that you need, you define a port profile for that. And that defines the settings for that virtual adapter, so that every host will get the same prioritization for the cluster NIC. The cluster NIC will be connected to the right VLAN. It'll get the right set of IP addresses. And then the same port profiles can also be used then for the VMs. You want to make sure that your tenants get a certain set of quality out of their NICs, and that maybe your management VMs or your infrastructure VMs get a different level of quality to make sure that your infrastructure continues to work correctly. And so then as these port profiles change over time, or if the hosts drift away from the settings, VMM will compare what's in the port profiles. And if something doesn't match, then we'll flag it as being non-compliant. And you can go and remediate and reapply the settings so that, again, your environment stays as consistent as possible. So let me jump in now to VMM, and I'll show you some of these, how to set this up and use it in action. All right, so this is my VMM environment. So you can see the five hosts that I showed you in my picture. Basically right here, three of them are dedicated for general compute. Two of them are dedicated to the gateway. The gateway hosts are already configured into a cluster. And then I have two of my compute nodes as a cluster as well. My storage one is separate as a standalone host. So the first thing I'm going to do is show you my logical networks in my environment. So as you saw from my diagram, there are really two primary logical networks I have, my direct tap to the internet, and then I have a data center fabric network. I also have a load balancer network. That's for other demos. We can ignore that one for now. So these logical networks essentially define what does my fabric network look like. Because when VMM goes and creates a virtual adapter, whether it's on a VM or on the host, it has to know what IP addresses to use and what VLAN to use for that network, for that adapter. So we need to know how the network is configured, and that's what these logical networks are for. Now, to know to configure the switches and the virtual adapters on the hosts, we have the concept of a logical switch, which basically is that central template that's used to create your virtual switches. The inputs for the logical switch are your port profiles primarily. We provide a number of them out of the box for the virtual adapters, for different functions. And we've pre-configured these virtual adapter port profiles to meet the recommendations of what we suggest for clustering and host management to give the right level of service. You'll then go in and create your own uplink port profiles that define the physical connectivity for your host to the rest of the network. So if we look at what one of those looks like, you can see it has your basic teaming settings. And then it also has a list of the logical networks and the sites within the logical networks that are connected to this port profile. So the reason why you define this in a single location like this is now when you apply this to a cluster, every cluster, VMM will know that every cluster has the same set of networks available. Previously, if you're using older versions of VMM, you'd have to go to each adapter on the cluster and set these individually on each physical adapter. By putting on the port profile now, you have it available to every consistently across every host. click on this easier. So then when you go into the logical switch now, you basically build your logical switch using these port profiles. So if you look at what the logical switch contains, you give it a name. You can enable SROV when you first create it. We don't allow you to change this after the fact, because once you've created a virtual switch with SROV, or you create it without it, you can't change the virtual switch. So you have to decide up front if you're going to use SROV. If you're using any of the extensions that Bob talked about, you can enable them here. And then VMM, again, will ensure the consistency of your network by deploying the extensions automatically to every Hyper-V host that needs it. And then we'll also exchange information with the partners that wrote the extensions with their network manager to be able to pull in their port profiles so that you can select those as well in here. You select which uplink port profiles you want to use for your different hosts. If you have different clusters with different networks, you would have different profiles for those clusters. But you combine them all into this single logical switch, so they're available to use. And then finally, your virtual port profiles define your virtual adapter settings. I renamed mine so that they kind of match, so that I know if it's used for a VM or for host functions. One of the more important settings on here is this default column, because this defines the one that's marked as true. You can only have one that's marked as your default. Defines what the default settings. If a tenant comes in and creates a VM on your cloud with a VNIC, that tenant will get these settings that are marked as default. So it's important that you get that default one set so that your tenants can get whatever level of service they want by default. So then once you have your logical switch defined, you can actually go out and apply it to a host. So one of my hosts, my Hyper-V host 01, does not have a virtual switch created yet. So I'm going to use that logical switch that I just showed you to create a virtual switch on here. So your virtual switch, when you're using a logical switch, it's still just a virtual switch. There's nothing on the Hyper-V host that the Hyper-V host knows that it's a logical switch. It's mainly for VMM to apply the settings to. So I'm going to go new virtual switch and select new logical switch from that. I zoom in on that. So you can see I've selected new virtual switch, logical switch. I only have one logical switch. You'll generally only have one or a small number of these in your environment. And then I'm going to say which adapters I want to connect into it to create my team, because I did have the switch defined as a team. I'm going to select my dual port NIC to feed into that. And then my one uplink port profile is the one that I've got selected. Now, the other thing that's important you do, if you are building a fully converged network, you, of course, have to have a virtual adapter off of this switch so that your host can still communicate on the network. This box just says that it's going to be the management adapter. It's important that it inherits the settings from the physical adapter so that VMM can still communicate with the host. You have to select a VM network that defines the settings that are going to be available for this this virtual adapter. In the case of a host adapter, it'll pull in the VLAN, and it'll also define the address space. If it is a non-management adapter, then you can pick an IP address to use. So this is my host management. I'm going to pick the level of service I want from the port profile, and then I'll hit OK. Let's zoom out. So this is now going to go to the host. It'll take a few minutes to go to the host, and it'll go out and it'll create the virtual switch, it'll create the virtual adapter, and it'll actually create the LBFO team underneath it as well. So this host will then become fully configured. If your host has already been deployed, you have to go and do this on each host as you bring it in to the environment. If you want to ensure that consistency across your environment, you can also do this through a host profile and do the bare metal deployment through VMM. Then VMM will apply the same settings to every host as it deploys the operating system. Then you know you'll get it configured correctly. Over time. So now I have basically created one management adapter, but I haven't actually carved out any of those other functions that I said you may need, such as your live migration network. Let's say your live migration network, your live migrations are starving your data center network of traffic or of bandwidth, and so you want to carve that out into its own VLAN. Well, now that I've used a logical switch and a port profile, that's actually pretty easy to do. First thing I would do is I'd go to my physical switch. And this is just a general regular switch. I need to log in.
And you need to enable that VLAN on every port where you're going to need to have it available. So while I wait for this to log in, I'll go through and I'll do that. I'll create a VLAN that I'm going to dedicate for live migration. Now, this is very vendor specific on how you would do this. I'm going to do VLAN 102. I'm going to call this my live migration. Add it. And I need to save the settings. And then I need to actually make it available on every port. Click my VLAN 102. And it's going to be tagged on all these ports. That's important you get it configured on every single one, because otherwise your live migrations won't work if it's not enabled where it's needed. Make sure that gets applied. OK, so now I can go into VMM, and I can actually create a logical network to use that VLAN that I've now defined in my physical network. Now I need to model it in VMM so VMM knows that it's available to use. I do that by creating a logical network. And this logical network is going to be called host management. And there are a couple of options here. One is typically if you're deploying VMs and you want to be able to deploy a VM to a single network that has different settings in different parts of your data center, you would define that as one connected network, because you want VMM to pick the settings for that VM depending on which host it lands on. So, you know, you may have VLAN 1000 on one rack and VLAN 1001 on a different rack. Well, those two VLANs are considered connected if you have routing between them, so you define them as one connected network. In the case of these management VLANs, where you know that VLAN is fixed on a host, and when you go to deploy or you create your virtual adapter, you know what settings you want for it, then you can define that as a VLAN-based independent network. In this case, you're basically picking the VLAN you want. You're not letting VMM pick it based on where you deploy to. So when I do that, I'm going to add a site, and you would generally create one site per rack or per group of hosts that have the same network settings. I'm going to add that site. I'm going to call this site my rack one site. And within this site, I'm going to add the VLANs that are needed for host management in rack one. In this case, is VLAN 102. And I'll define my subnet 10.3.1.0/24. I'll eventually add other VLANs for clustering and whatever other host functions I need for management or for that host to function. But for now, I'll just put the one I need for live migration. I'll finish that. And then I'm going to quickly create an IP pool for that network that VLAN I just created. My live migration IP pool coming from the host management logical network, using the site I just defined and that VLAN. I'm going to use the full address range. There's no gateway because these hosts just talk within themselves. Now I've created an IP pool. The last thing I have to do is whenever you have a virtual adapter, whether it's on a host or a VM, you have to create a VM network that virtual adapter will connect to. So this is just going to pass through directly that VM network to the adapter, or that logical network to the VM network. So I'm going to call this live migration. The other thing that this does is by doing this, creating this VM network, I can essentially name that VLAN that I just created. So now whenever I go to use it, I can refer to it by name. So it's going to come from rack one. And here's the VLAN 102 that I just defined. OK, so now I have a VM network. So now the last thing I need to do to make it available for use, I have to just add it to my port profile. So this now says that VLAN 102 is going to be available on any host where this port profile is used. So now I've made it available, and then the last thing I need to do is actually add it to one of my hosts. Let's see if host HV101 has finished its virtual switch creation. Looks like it did. Let's go into the properties of that. See, it has the virtual switch I created. So now I'm just going to add one new adapter for my live migration network. I'm going to connect it to my live migration VM network that I created. It will automatically get the correct VLAN. I'm going to use my live migration port profile that I already had added to my logical switch. And since I don't have DHCP on this network, since I just created it, I'm going to give it a static IP address. VMM will pick one automatically from the pool, or you can assign one, and it'll assign a MAC address automatically. So there it is. I just carved out a network for live migration for this host. Now I would go and do that to all my other hosts as well. So that's great for your fabric networks, for getting your hosts up and running. But you don't want to do this for every single tenant you create, right? I had to go to the physical network to go and create the VLAN. I had to go and create the logical network. I had to tell VMM which host that was available on. So you generally don't want to use VLANs for tenants, as Bob explained earlier, because it's very high touch to use VLANs for that purpose. And that's where really the advantages of network virtualization come in. Switch back to my slides. So the key thing you need to get network virtualization in your environment is really a gateway. You can use your existing logical networks, or you can define an address space just for network virtualization to use. But the thing that'll kind of bridge the virtualized networks with your physical networks is that gateway that Bob talked about earlier. So I'm going to show you how to deploy that gateway. It's actually pretty easy to do from within VMM. The gateway, it requires two Hyper-V hosts, one if you don't care about high availability. But of course, we strongly recommend you use two for production. Those hosts fail over the network virtualization policy between the two of them. To actually do the routing, or the site-to-site VPN, or the NATing, you need a VM that actually does that. And so that's what you're actually going to deploy into these hosts, are the VMs that do the actual gateway functionality. If you look at what these VMs contain, if you look at the multi-tenant gateway that Bob talked about, the reason why it's multi-tenant is because whenever you create a virtual network on this gateway, you get a compartment for each one of those tenants. That compartment basically has its own central IP stack in it. It'll have its own address space using the customer's address space. And that compartment then gets bridged to what we call the default compartment that is your front end, that's really the shared part of the network. So site-to-site networking will bridge that compartment one or compartment two with the endpoint for the site-to-site tunnel that'll then connect to whatever the customer's endpoint is. And that would need to go through whatever firewall you have in front of it. I list the ports here needed for that. In the case of NAT, if you want your virtual network to get directly out to the network, but still have its own address space that doesn't overlap with anything else, or that does overlap with others, then we have the NAT service that'll go and do that mapping of the customer's address space with whatever your physical address space is. There you have to be a little more careful about, if there's a firewall in front, you generally want to map that address directly through. If you look at the logical view of what this looks like, one thing that customers don't, when you guys are setting this up, there's this routing subnet that exists between the gateway, which are the two blue boxes, one will be active, and the actual virtual network. So there's a subnet that's used just for the point-to-point routing. The reason for that is Hyper-V network virtualization has its own router built in that's used to route between the different virtual subnets within your routing domain, within that virtual network. When it realizes, the destination isn't one of these virtual subnets, it needs to have a next hop gateway, and so it uses that routing subnet to route out over the next hop. Now, if you look at the forwarding gateway is really just a router that does the encapsulation, decapsulation between the virtual subnet, in this case in my network on the left side, and the physical network. We do this all through the default compartment, which is why we don't call it the multi-tenant gateway. Basically, all the virtual networks go into this one compartment, and they'll route out or back in. And if there are multiple virtual networks behind it, it'll just route to those also. So there really is no reason to have multiple virtual networks behind the forwarding gateway. Now, you can deploy multiple forwarding gateway VMs into a single set of hosts. If you do have different front-end networks, so you do need to maintain some isolation, you would deploy a VM per front-end network that you have. And then those virtual networks behind it will stay isolated from the other gateways. The logical view of this looks a little bit different from the site-to-site NAT gateway. The red part, the virtual network part, is basically the same. But the front end, how you set up the routing on the front end of the network needs to be a little bit different. Your physical router, or whatever your router is out on your physical network, needs to have a route into your virtual address space. So you would point that route to the gateway's front end, and the gateway itself would then have your physical router as its default gateway. The other thing to keep in mind is when you do have a forwarding gateway is that you have to be careful about your address space in the virtual network because it can't overlap with other address spaces out on your physical network. So it's not quite as flexible in that regard, but you do get the advantages of now being able to still migrate these VMs anywhere within your data center, even if your different racks use different address spaces for their fabric part of their network. The virtual network will let them migrate across, and so you can very efficiently pack your VMs across multiple racks. All right, so let's go back to VMM, and I'll show you how to deploy this gateway and get it up and running. So back to my environment. Check my notes to make sure I didn't miss anything real quick. Yep. Okay, so the main thing is on my logical network, on my data center network, this is what I'm using is what we call the provider address space. This is what the actual tenant VM packets are going to get sent on the wire using this address space. Now, of course, the tenant VMs will have their own address space that's in their virtual network. And that's what network virtualization provides. But I have to tell VMM that this network is used for network virtualization. And I do that through this checkbox here. It says, allow a new VM network to create on this logical network to use network virtualization. The other thing I've done in my environment already is in my gateway host cluster, I've marked these hosts. If I go into the properties of the host under host access, there's this checkbox here that says this host is dedicated as a network virtualization gateway. It basically tells VMM that the network virtualization policy is going to go in through the gateway agent rather than through the regular host agent. And so that way the two sets of policy won't collide with each other. Whoops, did that wrong. Launch server manager instead of zooming out. I don't actually need that. All right. So now to actually get the gateway VMs up and running on this gateway cluster, we make a service template available. If you're familiar with VMM, you know that we have this concept of a service template that is essentially like a recipe for creating a tier of VMs, whether it's a clustered tier or just a group of VMs that act together. It's a recipe for how to create them and configure them so you can deploy them consistently. We distribute these through the web platform installer, or web PI. So if you do a search for web PI service templates, same way we distribute gallery items for Azure Pack, you'll find the Windows Server 2012 HA Gateway service template. And we have two versions of that. We have one for 2 NIC environments and one for 3 NIC environment. The difference is, if you're building a private cloud, the front end of your virtual network or the front end of this gateway may actually be the same as your management network. And that's the case in my environment. I have one single data center network. So I send my management traffic in through that front end as well. If you're building more of a hosted environment, then you would have your management adapter on a separate network. And so you'd have a 3 NIC configuration. These two templates are designed to then deploy correctly in either one of these environments. If we actually look at one of the templates, what they contain, you can open up the designer, and you can see the various settings. There are a number of settings that we have that we call configurable service settings. So when you go to deploy, it will ask you what to use for these settings. You can actually, what I usually do is I go into the service template and actually remove a lot of those for my environment, and I hard code them in, because the things that never change, I don't want to have to re-enter those every time I deploy a gateway. So I go into the service template, and I can open up the VM template that's used to create the VMs. And you can see that, like for example, on the network's adapters, we have this external here. Well, I know that my external network is always my data center, so in the one that I use to deploy, I select the actual network here. The other thing that you may need to come in and change is if you're using, especially for management, your infrastructure, if you're using DHCP or static addresses, you'll have to come in here and potentially change that in the template so that it'll deploy correctly. Also, if you're using V4 or V6, you need to make sure that's set correctly in the template. We have to kind of create the templates in a generic way, but you may still have to go in and do some customizations. The other area that you'll probably want to customize is the name of the VM, for example, or the admin password and the product key. If you want to deploy an eval version, you have to come in here to the template and remove the product key. We have a configurable setting for it. If the configurable setting is defined, then you have to enter a product key, otherwise the deployment will fail. But if you want to do an eval deployment, then you have to remove it from here. All right, so this was the 3-NIC template. I'm going to deploy the 2-NIC template because that's what I have for my environment. So deploying it is as simple as going to configure deployment. I'm going to call it my gateway VM cluster 03. And I'm going to put this into my all hosts host group. And so we'll get the configure deployment wizard will pop up. And the configure deployment wizard is where I do that final set of customizations that are needed for my background that are required for each unique deployment, such as the cluster name. I have to give it a cluster name, VM cluster 03. You have to give it a static IP address for the cluster address. This is going to be 172.16.30.5. And then you have to basically tell it which host to put it on. Placement will try to pick the right host, but generally, you know, I already know which host it's going to go on. I also like to put the cluster name in the VM name so I know which of my gateway clusters it's going to. That way, my VMs can all be numbered 1 and 2 to match the host that they're on. And then I'm going to select my host 2 for my gateway cluster. Gateway host 2. We'll go with VM number 2. And then gateway host 1 will go with VM number 1. This is cluster 03. Now I should be able to refresh placement. Placement should then show these as being suitable at this point. Now one thing that's important to know about these VMs, and this is one thing the customers often run into, these VMs themselves are not HA VMs. Once you deploy them onto a host, they're going to stay on that host. We use guest clustering within the VMs to fail over the configuration between them. The reason for that is because we can do that much faster than failing over the VM. If you fail over the VM, you're going to have to wait for that VM to reboot. In the case of a guest cluster, along with the host cluster that fails over the network virtualization policy, in a lot of cases, we can fail over that VM in just a few seconds. Sometimes in under 10 seconds. Really, the times when it'll take longer is if you have site-to-site tunnels. Those take a lot longer to discover that the connection went down and reestablish the connection. All right, so I'm going to go and actually deploy the service now. And this one's going to go run. It'll take, in my environment, because my hosts aren't very fast, it'll take about an hour and 15 minutes to get that deployed. So, like a good cooking show, I've already got some deployed that I will take out of the oven and I will use. So if we go to my VMs and services view, we can see the new one that I'm deploying now. This one will take a little while to get out there. I'm going to use my cluster 01 that I've already deployed. I did this yesterday while I was practicing and testing. This one's already deployed and up and running. You can see it consists of my two VMs, cluster 1 and 2, VM 1 and 2. Now, I've deployed it as a service. VMM doesn't yet know that this is a gateway. It just knows here's a service that you've deployed, and it's got two VMs in it. And I have to tell it that it's a network virtualization gateway. So I do that by going back to my network view in the fabric, and I go to the network service. This is also the place where you would start if you had a third-party gateway. Let's say you went to F5 or A10 or Iron Networks and got one of their gateways. You'd follow their instructions for how to do the initial provisioning of that appliance. And then you'd come here and actually add it to VMM in the same way that I'm going to add the Windows Server gateway. Then I'm going to add resources, network service. And I'm going to call this my gateway VM cluster 01. VMM has to know how to talk to the gateway. In the case of the Windows-based gateway, we have a provider for VMM pre-installed. It gets installed when you install VMM. If you have a third-party gateway, you would need to install the provider for that gateway, so the VMM would know how to talk to that gateway as well. So you'd see that here under the manufacturer and model. Of course, I have to have credentials to talk to it. I've already created a runAS account for that. That's what stores our credentials. And then the connection string. The connection string basically defines which gateway you're going to talk to. Now, the connection string is dependent on the vendor of the gateway. For the Windows Server gateway, there are a few things that we need to know in the connection string. If you look at what it contains the host that the gateways are on, or actually the cluster, because we'll talk to the cluster because we need to do some configuration of the cluster for the host. It contains the name of the VM cluster. So here's my gateway VM cluster 1. So as we have to be able to talk to the gateway VMs to set up the routing or site-to-site tunnels. And then we need to know which virtual switch that VM will be connected to. We don't actually connect the back-end adapter of the gateway to the virtual switch until it gets added to VMM. And the reason is because we have to go into that VM and enable the multi-tenancy on that adapter, or the multi-tenant, the virtual subnet trunking on the adapter. Our service template deployment model doesn't support that, so we have to do it through the plugin. And so that's why we add that here. So I hit next. If your device uses certificates, then you'd review the certificate. The Windows Server Gateway doesn't. And then it's generally a good idea to test it here. We'll go out and make sure we can connect to the gateway. We'll open the connection. We'll test its capabilities, and then we'll close the connection again. This one passed the connection, so I can hit next. Say what host groups I want this gateway to be available for, and then I finish. This will take a few seconds to get added, and then it'll become available. One last configuration set of settings I have to make on this gateway is I have to go to its properties, and now I have to define whether this is a third-party gateway or the Windows Server gateway. It's going to have multiple adapters in it, and I have to tell VMM, okay, which one is the front end and which one is the back end? And I have to do that after it's been added to VMM, because that's when VMM queries the gateway and discovers, oh, here are the adapters that are available to use. So I'm going to enable the front end connection. And my front end network adapter, I know it's connected to my Contoso network. Our service template goes in and renames the adapters to match whatever the network settings are for that adapter so that we'll be able to tell what it is. And my front end site is my data center network. I'm going to enable the back end. We name the back end adapter back end because we know which one it is because it's not connected. And the back end site, in my case, it's the same. I have one fabric network that I use for everything, so it's also my data center network. I'm going to zoom back out. Hit OK. So that'll now take a few seconds to go talk to the gateway. And this is really with Windows Server Gateway where we do all the work of configuring that gateway. We'll go into the gateway, we'll enable the multi-tenant environment with the compartments, we'll do some configuration on the host to make sure it's ready to go, and now it's ready to actually deploy. You can now create, by default, up to 50 virtual networks behind this gateway that I've deployed for site-to-site mode. We actually support up to 100, so you can override the default of 50, go up to 100 virtual networks. And the nice advantage of the multi-tenant gateway is that when a tenant comes in and creates their network, you don't have to wait for that VM gateway to get created. The gateway is already here. We just have to go in and apply the configuration. So it can generally be done within a few seconds. All right, so let's see here. Let's go back to see what I got in my slides. So that's the gateway. So now my cloud and my multi-tenant environment is ready to use. Or at least the networking parts of it. You would normally go in and create a cloud and all the other parts of that that aren't necessarily specific to the networking. Next thing I want to show you is now how do you actually use it with your tenants? Well, the primary way we expect a multi-tenant environment to be used is through the Azure Pack. If you're a hoster, you would potentially use that to make it available to your tenants. If you're really advanced, you could build your own portal on top of SPF. But we find a lot of hosters just want to customize the Azure Pack and build their own add-ins to it. If you're an enterprise, you can act as your own hoster for your own departments with Azure Pack as well. Basically, you apply the hoster model to your own enterprise. Or you can use VMM directly to go and create the virtual networks that are used in your own enterprise. So let's go back to my demo environment. And I'll show you how the Azure Pack will use the gateway that I just configured. So the Azure Pack basically has two portals that are relevant. You have the service provider admin portal, which is really where you go and you do, the service provider admin would come in and do some of the initial setup for building, making this available to self-service users. I started here by already adding my VMM server to my VM cloud. So now Azure Pack knows that I can create VMs here and create networks. There's also a network view here that's useful for service provider admins where they can go in and if one of the tenants is having an issue, they can come in here, query the networks there, find that tenant's network, and go in and see what the properties are. If that tenant is using site-to-site, for example, you can go in and find out what their site-to-site address is and help them through setting up their site-to-site connection. I'm not going to wait for that to finish loading. It hasn't cached it because I haven't accessed that in a while, so it'll take a few seconds for that to load. You also need to go in, and when you create your plan for your tenants, you would go into that plan, and you would need to enable that the tenant would have tenant self-service on here as well. So I'd go into my VM cloud, and as part of the VM cloud, if you scroll down on that, sure, click in the right place. The important settings are under virtual networks. You check this box off to say they can create virtual networks. You can control how much bandwidth the tenant gets to use out of the environment. You can say whether or not they get to create site-to-site tunnels, and if so, how many. And then in your environment, you may still have shared networks. VMM lets you create a VM network, not just for network virtualization, but you can create a VM network on top of a VLAN, a VM network that spans multiple VLANs as the connected logical networks that I showed you earlier. And you can use these as shared networks for your tenants, so that if you want a tenant to come in and create, well, in this case, you want them to connect directly to the internet, you would have a shared internet connection, or you want them to connect to your corporate network directly, you would have a shared corporate network, and you'd, on their plan, add that, and then they would automatically get access to that network and be able to use it just like any network virtualization network. So that's the service provider admin. Once you've actually gone in and enabled then that tenant, that plan, then you can have a tenant come into the plan. They can go in and they can create their own networks. So I'm going to go in here. I've already got one created. I'm going to go and create another new one for this tenant. I'm going to go new, virtual network. I'm going to do custom create. You can do quick create, but then you won't get the gateway configuration. I'm going to call this my TechEd 14 network. And I'm going to pick IPv4. I'm going to give it a DNS server. In this case, I'm going to enable NAT, so I'm actually going to go through the gateway to my data center network and use my DNS server on my data center network. So I'm using my data center address space for that. Zoom in on that so you can see it. So I used 172.16.0.1, and I'm going to enable NAT on this network now as well. I can get my mouse over that checkbox. There it is. You can customize the gateway subnet. It's not really relevant necessarily for NAT, because unless you actually do want to use that 10.254.254 subnet in your virtual network. But it is important if you are using site-to-site tunnel, because if your corporate space or whatever address space you're tunneling to uses this subnet, you need to change it here. In my case, for NAT, I don't really care what the address space is, because it's just contained within this virtual network, so I'm going to leave the default of 10.0.0.0. And I'll hit OK. And so what's going to happen now is, the Azure Pack is going to go through to SPF. It's going to talk to VMM. And it's going to go into VMM, and it's going to start to create the virtual network. You can see here it's starting to show up now. And it'll create, the virtual subnets. It'll create the gateway configuration. And it'll then create the IP pool that's needed to actually allocate addresses from that. If we actually go over here and look in VMM, you should be able to see that some of that is already starting to appear. Go to VM Networks. You can see here's the TechEd 14 network that I just created. You can go into the properties. You can see the subnet. This is my 10.0.0.0 subnet. And the connectivity, it hasn't applied the configuration yet for NAT, so that's probably still running. I jumped a little bit ahead of where it is. So it's still creating. It'll take a few more seconds to go do that. But you can see how quickly now we've already started to apply this configuration. We didn't have to wait for a VM to speed up. If you had faster hosts than me, this would probably go even faster. You have to wait for a VM to speed up, and it will get up and running now within a few seconds. Wait a little bit longer for that to finish. There it is. Now it's been created. So that probably took less than a minute. Felt like forever from my perspective, but that's just. All right, so now if I go into the properties, you can see we actually have NAT enabled on the network, and it actually got assigned an address on the front end. So when we enable NAT, we assign one address to the front end of that network. You can enable inbound ports. You can do that through the Azure pack or here through VMM directly. Last thing I need to do to be able to use that network, oh, and the other thing I can show you real quick, is Azure pack will pick automatically from the available gateway. So you can see here, use the gateway VM cluster 1. That's the gateway I just added to my environment. It picked that one because it had the most capacity available. VMM will automatically pick whichever gateway has the most available capacity if you have multiple in your environment. So now if I go back to the Azure pack, the last thing I need to do is attach a VM to that network. So I'm going to go to my test VM that I've already created. I don't want to sit here and wait for that to get created. I'm going to go to configure, and I'm going to attach to a network. And then you can see here my available networks. I have that shared data center network that I added to the plan, so I could actually connect directly to my data center. And behind the scenes, VMM would apply the necessary VLAN and IP settings for the data center network. But in this case, I'm going to connect to my TechEd 14 network. That'll take a few seconds to complete. And then as soon as that finishes, I can go and start the VM. Oddly enough, sometime attaching the virtual adapter can take longer than configuring the gateway. Oh, it's done. All right, so I'm going to start this VM. Yes, I do want to start it. And then while that's starting, I'm going to go and connect to it. I'm going to do this through VMM. Find it on my host. It's on host 3, actually. My test VM, I'll connect to that, and I'll show you that it actually does work. Second to connect. Hopefully it'll be booted up by the time it gets started. There we go. I'm going to log in, and then let's see if this network actually works. PowerShell window. So you can see what I'm doing. I'll do IP config, let's see what address it got. Hopefully it got a 10.0.0.0 address from the subnet I defined. Yep, it did, 10.0.0.2. 10.0.0.1 is the HNV router. That one address is reserved for that purpose, and we automatically assign it. So now if I ping 172.16.0.1. This is my my DNS server on my physical network. You can see it's actually able to ping now outside through the gateway. Everything went up and worked fine. So I actually got everything up and running within the time of this session. Now once you have that up and running, you can actually use this gateway that I've just deployed to actually, if you have the right set of ports enabled on your firewall, to connect to and from Azure. Azure has a similar set of virtual networking capabilities. It can create site-to-site tunnels out. And Azure Pack automatically applies the correct defaults to the site-to-site tunnels when it gets created to connect to Azure. The main thing is you have to exchange the pre-shared key correctly and point to the correct gateway IP addresses for the two endpoints. But once you do that, then it should come up and work fine. We actually demoed this yesterday in one of the foundational sessions. If you look up Jeffrey Snover's session from yesterday, you can actually see the detail of how that was done. But I can just show you real quick here. Bring up the demo environment that they used. You can see they have a VM similar to one that I had Right now, it's already pinging across to the 172.16.1.5 subnet, which is actually hosted in Azure. If I go into the configuration of that virtual network, you can see that there is a VPN connection defined. And oh, I don't have zoom it here. It basically has its own endpoint, which I've gone into Azure and configured. So Azure points back to this IP address here. That's the gateway for the on-premises gateway. And then I have the Azure endpoint that I've entered in here so that this gateway can talk to Azure. Because the connection for site-to-site tunnel can get established from either direction. So you have to be able to point back and forth. We've entered in to the Runaz account the pre-shared key that Azure provided. Azure generates a pre-shared key. When that gets generated, you have to put it into System Center. You can also do that through the Azure pack. And then we've also said that, yeah, the route, the 172.16.0.1.0, is going through the site-to-site tunnel and connecting to Azure. And so that's why the ping here is able to work. So if you want to see the step-by-step of how this was created, go back and watch the recording of that, the foundation session. Last thing I want to talk about, in the last few minutes before I open it up for questions. Oh, some packets still want to go through. There's still more you can do to the environment. You know, what I set up is really good for proof of concept, for a lab, if you want to get up and running. It's kind of just above the bare minimum. You know, I did some more advanced steps, such as using teaming to be able to spread the load out over multiple adapters. I created my gateway in a highly available manner. But there's more you can do. For starters, I put everything onto my data center network. In a real production environment, you'd probably have a DMZ in front of your gateways that separates, you know, the untrusted traffic from your data center. So you'd want to configure your firewall and have an extra VLAN for that DMZ as part of your fabric. You'd then connect your gateways to that DMZ and your Azure pack to that DMZ as well. The other thing that you'll want that I don't have in my environment is you want to have VMM and pretty much all of your components deployed in a highly available manner. You have to remember that VMM is your network controller. VMM has to be able to stay up and update the policy. If a VM live migrates, if it fails over, you need to make sure that VMM is able to update the policy on those hosts. You need to make sure VMM itself is always up and always running. So you would deploy VMM in a highly available configuration so that if, you know, the active VMM server fails, the second one will start up and take its place. You'd, of course, do the same for the Azure pack, same for SQL, even same for your AD, DNS, DHCP. Still only have one tenant VM in my environment. The other thing that we'd recommend is that if your gateway is facing untrusted tenants, you deploy an untrusted Active Directory domain for it. You can still add the gateway to VMM and the host that that gateway is on as an untrusted host, an untrusted gateway. VMM will then be able to still go in and configure it. But now if, let's say, you know, that gateway gets compromised, you know, which of course never happens. If it does get compromised, they won't be able to attack the rest of the environment as easily because, you know, the hosts themselves aren't trusted or the VMs aren't trusted. The other thing that I'd recommend that's on here as well is, in my environment, I only have one top of rack switch. You're probably wondering why I put the top of rack switch at the bottom of my diagram. Don't ask me. I'd recommend that you have two of those top of rack switches. Obviously, you want to have your team be able to spread the load over two switches so that if one switch fails, the other switch will be able to still be able to route traffic in and out, take full advantage of the FO part of the LBFO team. So that it can fail over between the two NICs. And that's just part of building up your physical network reliably. With that in review, you know, Bob talked about all of the capabilities we have in the platform. I walked you through what's needed to actually turn that platform into a cloud and how, you know, your tenants can go in and use it. There are other sessions specifically on networking that you can go to. I'll leave this up here for a few seconds if you want to write any of these down. These will talk in some of these details, especially a lot of the stuff that Bob talked about. You'll get a good deep dive on some of the networking capabilities. Some of these have already happened, so you'll have to go and watch the recordings. I'd also recommend you go back, look at the foundation session if you're interested in how to connect to Azure. It's not listed here, but it should be easy to find. There aren't that many of those. It's the one that Jeffrey Snover gave, along with Matt McSpirit gave the demos in that one. with that. Have all the other filler at the end of these sessions. We'll be around for questions. Thanks for attending.